Oh man, I'm waking up from a 3-month nap here. What's been going on? Okay, to be a little bit serious, we'll get a little stuff out of the way, personal stuff, what's been going on the past several months. First off, I hope that nobody has been affected by the COVID corona going around. If you have, I hope you're safe. I hope everybody you know is safe. What happened was my fiance, and again, if you have listened to the show episodes of Whispers of Oxenfurt, that would be Lindsay, my fiance, she actually tested positive for it. And so a few weeks ago, we went into a straight actual quarantine. It's like 14, 15 days. We stayed at home and then went back. And well, that's a whole other story that you heard about if you followed my Twitter. But we should be good to go. We feel great. I feel as great as I can considering summer allergies in Texas. It's been raining the past few days. If I sound a little bit funny, it's probably that. But it's more than likely because I bit the shit out of my lip last night. And the left side feels like it's just kind of doing this. I know it doesn't, but it sounds like it to me. So if that's the case, whatever. I don't know. Get over it. One thing also to get out of the way, I'm really bad at promoting and being like, hey, do this, this, and this, but I've realized it needs to work. So a very, 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 very easy way to help the podcast and help me out, because again, you know, I don't have a Patreon. I don't want to do all that. I would gladly do ads if somebody pays me, but there's nothing in there. So if you want to help out and think, what's the easiest thing I can do? Just simply rate and review it. I'm looking at it right now on iTunes. It's a 5.0 rating. I have two Witcher podcasts that are 5.0 rated, this and the Winds Howling one, which primarily focuses on the show. But I'm looking at 73 ratings and 0 1-star ratings. Hey, how about that? So if you would please rate and review, and unless you're going to give me a 1-star, then just ignore everything that I've said. But just give a rate, give a little bit of review. Share it, retweet, like it on Twitter, all of that sense. It really helps. It's free, it's cheap, it's easy, and I would really appreciate it. With that out of the way, this might be the longest we've ever gone without getting to the content. I really apologize. But hey, we're back, and we're almost through The Lady of the Lake. So here's chapter 10. Let's get rolling. In perfect Sapkowski form, this chapter starts in the present, which I guess it kind of always does, and through the memories of three men, we get everything that has transpired over the previous few months. The tracker, Boreas Munn, who above all people would give a hellacious history of Ciri from the periphery. He was there on the ice, and again at Stiga, and lived to tell about it. The pilgrim, Sigismund Dijkstra, on the run from, it appears, his former lover, Philipper Eilhart, after he said one word too many about the assassination of King Vesemir. The elf, Isengrim Foltiarna, a newly minted outlaw on the run from any human in power. All their stories and histories are woven together as they relax around a fire and make nice. DJ starts out with, and DJ is Dijkstra, starts out with a retelling of the Peace of Sintra, the treaty between Nilfgaard and the Northern Realms, which ended the Second Northern War. Every king and queen remotely involved in the undertakings of the war are present, including Meave, Henselt, Foltest, Venslav, Demivan, Ethan, Kistrin, and Duke Neithart representing Redania, as Radovid is just a wee young laddie. And there are others there, but we'll kind of mention them a little bit later. It is led by the Hierarch, Cyrus Anglican Hamilfart, but we don't really stick around too long for that because we go to the Lodge of Sorceresses, as they eavesdrop using a telecommunicator, and we get Triss's thoughts, and that at least her little sister, Cirilla, is safe with Yen and Geralt. Unless they lie to her again. Ho ho ho. Rare. This part doesn't interest me too much. I should say the part with the kings and queens, because it just deals with the political machinations. But it's worth pointing out again that the Northern Realms were never really united. They just always had a common enemy in Nilfgaard and non-humans. Here a massive argument breaks out over land Henselt seized from Demavind in Upper Edirne. Henselt shows that he is just the biggest bitch of them all, throwing a tantrum and insulting Demavan and seemingly everyone with every word out of his mouth. The leader of the Nilfgaardian delegation, Shillard Fitz-Osterlin, can barely hide his smile. Demavan concedes that he will grant the elves and Dol Blathana their territory as long as they accept it as a duchy and pay him homage. The sorceresses are annoyed by Henselt's actions, and Sabrina, the court mage there, assures the lodge that they will be gone within 10 days. With that settled, they go to the problem of Dol Blathana, which Francesca says she will not pay tribute or be beholden to Demavan. They will be free and, you know, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. They will work something out. And she then reveals that she basically sold out the Scoia'tael, along with Nilfgaard and the Northern Realms. They are branded as war criminals, the top one being the Iron Wolf Isengrim himself. The concept of total war is brought up as Nilfgaard is giving up some mighty big concessions, but as the ambassador Luvardin says, emperors pass, corporations remain. Capitalism is the true victor of this war, as northern infrastructure and agriculture are largely destroyed, and they will have to buy from Nilfgaard, the good of the empire. And now, the main event, the discussion of the inheritance of Sintra and Cirilla Fiona Ellen Rhiannon, which it seems has already been resolved. Emir has decided that, you know, what the hell, I'll go ahead and keep this false Ciri as the Empress and keep up appearances. At the negotiations, we get the inner thoughts of the monarchs about what they think of a portrait of Ciri, and most are banal, except Estorad of Kovir, who knows that is not the real Ciri. I hope he doesn't get assassinated or anything. Poor child, thought Dijkstra. She probably thinks her pain and terror is over. A parade is held in Novigrad for the victors of the war. We get the dwarves from Mahakam showing their ass and annoying the stuck-up humans. Oh. The Free Company with Julia Abitamarco and Adam Pangrant is there as well. But it's Radovid in the descriptions there that I'm interested in. The 13-year-old boy is resentful that nobody is shouting for his mother, father, or himself, and feels the dark, unfathomable eyes of Philippa fixate on him, which is eyebrow-lifting if you have finished the games. All you just wait, said the boy who would go down in history, is Radovid the Stern. We switch to Yara, because why the hell not have more characters in this goddamn chapter? He lost a hand at Brenna and still pines over Ciri. 6 horses, 8 riders, elves, pass by them going in the opposite direction. The pride long gone, they resemble nothing of the feared Scoia'tael commandos of the war. A wounded elf, hunched over, flies amassed over a bloodied bandage. In another callback, this is Teruvial. In a very touching moment, and perhaps the only real hope for the future, the humans offer them all kinds of food. For the first time anyone there could remember, the elves accepted the offering, and contrary to popular folklore, they actually have tear ducts as they begin to cry. An elf sporting the silver lightning bolts of the Vryhead Brigade spoke the kindest words in a strange language. Thank you, man. Before long, Yar and the wagon come upon another set of riders. A woman with short, white-cropped hair asked if they had seen any Scoia'tael terrorists from a nearby destroyed commando. They lied, saying they haven't, but White Raylan knew what they were saying, and she knows no pity. Let's just rapid fire through the rest of this, okay? Let's see. Stefan Skellen is executed, name lost to history, the plague begins to take over, good job, Ciri. Isengrim escapes from soon-to-be executors, DJ flapped his gums a bit too much at Philippa, his right-hand man, Ori Reuven, was tortured and imprisoned for 6 years, yet another name lost to history. Back at the campfire, the 3 men all give their new names and agree to travel together. A merry band of brothers, a tracker, a pilgrim, and an elf. There wasn't too much in this that I really wanted to just discuss on my own. Like I mentioned, a lot of political machinations and resetting of the tables. But one thing I thought about while doing this was False Ciri and The Witcher 3. So if you have not played that game yet, whatever, here's your spoiler alert for a 5-year-old game. One thing that is explicitly missing from The Witcher 3 is False Ciri. She isn't Gwent, the Witcher card game, and even mentioned in The Witcher 2 in a letter on Shillard where he makes reference to his imperial consort. I could not find anything too substantial or really overtly confirmed, but it appears False Ciri was going to be in The Witcher 3 in Skellige and presumed dead, but it was scrapped, like a lot of stuff from that game was. Removing False Ciri from the canon makes everything we talked about in this chapter almost moot. If False Ciri never existed, and people were not fooled into believing she was the real Ciri, therefore the succession of Sintra was secure, then what the hell do we make of Emir and his wanting the real Ciri in The Witcher 3? Without the False Ciri, Sintra would have been fought over, and I can't believe they would have been given up by anyone in the Northern Realms. They won the war. Sintra is a jewel that nobody would have wanted anyone else to have, even a fellow kingdom. It would have put them over the top and been an unbalance of power. It also goes to say that Emir would eventually go on to actually love and care for the False Ciri. It kind of makes it easier that he let his actual daughter go and, you know, didn't have to marry and impregnate her. While we were on it, the whole relationship between Emir and Geralt is, I don't want to say bad in The Witcher 3, but it just is off after going through all this. Considering the last time they would have seen each other was when Emir was forcing Geralt and Yen into suicide and abducting Ciri. I know he had that change of heart, but still, to Geralt, that was his last interaction. I rewatched the meeting between Emir and The Witcher, and wow, it's pretty underwhelming. There's no mention of what transpired, and I don't think it ever comes up in a future conversation. If it did, please let me know, and I'll check it out, and I will gladly, you know, admit being wrong. I tend to also have a different feeling about the characterizations after pouring through the books, with Emir in particular standing out. But the next one, DJ, also some comes up. So this is the last we hear of Dijkstra in the books, part of a triumvirate bent on laying low and staying out of harm's way by going to the edge of the world, it seems. While Seta Project captured his wit and assholeness very well, you know, why did he come back? He had numerous enemies and shows back up to run a criminal empire, and then eventually doesn't like the way Radovid is persecuting mages and decides to kill him. I understand the power-hungry aspect, but I just never really bought why he came back? Reason of state? Whatever the reasons, let's say positive. And rewatching the old scenes with Geralt and Dijkstra are probably my favorite. Geralt brings up neutrality and why he won't kill Radovid. And DJ just does not have any time for his bullshit and calls him out immediately, saying he pulls that line out every time the temperature rises. Somehow, he needs to come back for The Witcher 4. Plot holes be damned. But again, if any of this stuff did come up in a conversation I don't remember and could not find, please let me know. So hitting back up on what I had at the beginning, please rate, review, like, share, retweet, all that fun stuff in there. All the other information is down below, all the socials, the YouTube channel that I have, there's some Witcher videos on there. If you have finished The Last of Us, I did a special little episode discussing the concept of revenge in that story. My Twitch is down there, usually stream Gwent, pretty much only really stream Gwent, a little bit of Jackbox in there. I'm going to be streaming probably a lot more. I'm in the process of moving, but with fiance going back to work, I'll have a little bit more time. We're about to go to a house where I'll have my own room to do all this stuff, so there should be a lot easier way for the content to come out. Granted, as a teacher, more than likely, we're going to go back to school at some point and in some fashion. But I don't know if we're actually going to go back to the actual building. So if I'm staying from home, working from home, well, it'll be a lot easier to get a lot more content out. But a lot of it has to do with me knowing what people want. And so if you watch that YouTube video, the one thing I did over The Witcher was the reuniting of Geralt and Ciri. Anything like that, just like, subscribe, support it in any way possible. I really, really, really appreciate it. And it's good to be back. There were only 2 chapters left, and man, some shit hit the fan. After that, I will pretty much describe the future of the podcast from there. I'm still going to have this. I still love talking about the books. It's just different ways of kind of what I'm going to do going forward. and hopefully bringing on more guests. We've really only had like one the whole time. So yeah, we'll bring on guests, do all that. But we'll cross that bridge when we get there. We're going to finish the saga. We're going to knock this out. Again, I appreciate all the support, all the love. Stay safe.